Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
The scriptures, this morning's scripture reading will be taken from chapter 24, verses 13 through 21. That's Luke chapter 24, 13 through 21. It can be found on pages 1218, and the Bible is provided for you. And it reads, "Now behold, two of them were traveling the same day to a village called Emmaus, which was 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they talked together of all these things which had happened. So it was, while they conversed and reasoned, that Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were restrained, so that they did not know him. And he said to them, What kind of conversation is this that you have with one another as you walk and are sad? Then the one whose name was Cleopas answered and said to him, Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem, and have you not known the things which happened there in these days? And he said to them, What things? So they said to him, The things concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed, and word before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this today is the third day since these things happened."
As we begin the last month of the year, we have the last of our 12 verses that we've been looking at to focus on how we can serve God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. If you would, read with me these two verses in Colossians 3, 23 and 24. "Whatever you do, work heartily, as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ." I hope we can remember that, especially in a time of year where it is easy to focus on what we have or what we want. I hope we'll continue our focus on serving others. One of my favorite games to play growing up, I guess it was because I got to play it with my father growing up, and one of the games I like to play now, even though I'm not very good, is the game of chess. You may like to play chess, you were probably better at it than I am, but that's never stopped me from doing much of anything if I haven't been good at it that I still enjoy doing. And if you think about the game of chess, it's really simple and complex at the same time. This is pretty much the key character if you were lining up two teams in the game of chess. This is the king. You have two armies that are kind of arrayed against each other, and the purpose of the game is to take your opponent's king and protect your king at the same time. One of the things that I've enjoyed doing on mission trips is going to different countries and trying to find little chess sets from each one. And because of that, I have several in my office, which I think would make some people, you know, think that I'm somehow good at chess, even though I'm not. But one thing that I've enjoyed thinking about is just the strategy involved if you have a game of chess going on. What's happening is you have different pieces that can move in different directions. Each one has a certain way they can move. And ultimately, your goal is to put your opponent in check. In other words, to get the king trapped so that the king can't move anywhere without being taken by one of your players. Now, that's hard because at the same time, you're trying to protect your own king. And so it requires a lot of strategy, requires a lot of planning. And one of the most depressing things that you can hear when you're playing a game of chess is check. The most depressing thing you can hear is checkmate, because what that means is you're trapped. There's nowhere else that you can go. No matter what plans you had, no matter what strategies you had going through your mind, the game is over because your king is trapped. It can be pretty depressing to hear. That means the end of the game. And there have been times when someone has put me in checkmate that I've just stayed for 5 or 6 minutes just looking at the board. Surely there's a move I hadn't thought of. You know, surely I'm overlooking something and there's some piece that can come in and rescue me. And usually that doesn't work. Usually the game is over. I bring all this up because as we get toward the end of the Gospel of Luke and as we get to what takes place right after the crucifixion, I think that might be a good way to describe how the disciples of Jesus would have felt. I think in their minds it would have seemed like checkmate. It would have seemed like they had a king that came into Jerusalem and they were looking for this king to rule over them and to overthrow this government that had control of them. But the very opposite happened. The Jewish leaders, using the Roman authority, put him to death on a cross. It was humiliating as a way to die. It was painful. It was torturous. And so now they're left wondering, what's our next move? What do we do next? Is there another move? Is there something else that could happen? And then reports of the resurrection begin to surface. Women begin reporting, having seen an empty tomb and having spoken to Jesus. And when we come to Luke 24, we see a conversation that Jesus has with two disciples that are on the road out of Jerusalem and are on the road to Emmaus. And what they find out is there's still another move left. It's not checkmate. The game is not over. There's still another move to be played. And in fact, when they see what has happened, when they see the resurrection, they'll realize it was God's plan all along. As they're walking onto the road to Emmaus, they're also kind of on a road of understanding what has taken place. I think that in the passage that Matt read for us, one of the most depressing statements, one of the saddest statements, is that statement that we had hoped. Or we were hoping, as they're describing to Jesus what they hoped would happen. They said, we had hoped that He would be the one. We thought He was going to be the one. And so you can picture them after the crucifixion, after what's happened in the last few days, walking down the road and they were hopeless and dejected and disappointment and disappointed, filled with disappointment. And so we ask the question, what could give them hope? What is it that could instill hope inside them? And as we think of our own situation, it is easy, especially with the challenges we face every day, to be filled with that same kind of hopelessness. It's easy to look around and feel like we're trapped, like we're living in a world that seems to be opposed to Christian thought. We might be dealing with some things at work that are incredibly challenging, or some things at home, some family issues that are incredibly challenging, and we feel trapped, and we maybe even feel hopeless. And so this morning, I'd like for us just to be reminded of the hope that is found in Scripture, the hope that is found in Jesus Christ. And as we think about it, I'd like for us to walk alongside these two disciples on the road to Emmaus and see how their hope was restored. The first thing that we see happen is we see that these two individuals, in order to rediscover hope, needed to discover the purpose of the cross. And we see that as we're reading through the text. We've read through 21 as they're describing their take about what had happened. But let's begin reading in 22 as they continue this conversation with Jesus. And remember, they don't know who they're speaking to. They say, moreover, some women of our company amazed us. They were at the tomb early in the morning, and when they did not find His body, they came back, saying that they had even seen a vision of angels who said that He was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but Him they did not see. And He said to them, meaning Jesus, O foolish ones and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets had spoken. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into His glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, He interpreted to them in all the Scriptures the things concerning Himself. The first thing they had to do was to understand the purpose of the cross. I don't know if we can overstate how confusing it would have been for those who followed Jesus to be looking at the cross and trying to make sense of why this had taken place. And so they needed to understand what that meant. Now the wording when it describes them speaking alongside the road is a strong sense of the language. In other words, it's an intense discussion. This is not just a casual conversation. They are intently thinking about what has happened. And then Jesus comes up beside them. They're prevented from seeing who He is. And he comes up and begins to ask a question, saying, "What are you talking about? What's this conversation you're having?" You can imagine how surprised these two individuals would have been. It would almost be like someone going into London recently during the Olympics and walking up to an average person on the street and saying, "Hey, is there a big event that's going on right now? Is there something happening over on that side of the city?" Well, everyone knew in London the Olympics were there, but they had built an entire new facilities there. They had rerouted traffic. They had changed everybody's schedule. It was obvious. And so for someone to walk up and say, "Hey, is there something going on?" they would have been kind of shocked. They would have had a similar reaction that Cleopas and the disciple he was walking with had, saying, "Are you the only stranger that hasn't heard what took place?" And so they began to describe it from their perspective. Now we find out they're prevented from knowing who Jesus was. I don't know exactly how that happened, but we don't really see in the text what took place. It could be that they just never would have expected Jesus to be walking beside them. After all, if they knew what took place in a crucifixion, there were no survivors of a crucifixion. The Roman government knew how to put people to death in the most painful and humiliating way possible. So to have someone that would be walking alongside them that had been crucified, even if they'd heard reports of it, wouldn't have been something they were expecting, especially not on the way home. It may be that Jesus' body, Jesus' form, might have even looked a little different. In fact, Mark's gospel tells us in Mark 16 and verse 12, as he briefly describes this conversation, "After that, he," meaning Jesus, "appeared in a different form, the two of them, while they were walking along their way to the country." We know Jesus' resurrected body was different than his physical body on earth. When we're reading through John's gospel, there's a time when the disciples are in a room and they've shut the door because they were afraid of what might happen to them, of some persecution. And then Jesus comes into the room. In other words, he's able to walk into a room with a door that's closed. And so there evidently was something different about his resurrected body. Whatever the case, God is allowing them not to recognize who Jesus is. And it's an interesting and I think even almost a symbolic way, as we read through this conversation, to realize they don't discover who he is until he has interpreted Scripture for them. Until he's told them what passages in the Old Testament mean. Can you imagine what it would be like to listen to a Bible class that was taught by Jesus? Wouldn't you just love to have been walking behind them on the road and just eavesdropping on what Jesus was saying? If we ever needed a reminder why the Old Testament is important, I think we have one right here. Because where does Jesus begin when he explains the cross to them? He begins with Moses and all the prophets. If I really want to understand who Jesus is, I need to understand the Old Covenant. I need to understand the law of Moses, the writings of the Old Testament. And the more I understand those, the deeper knowledge I have of those, the more I'll appreciate Jesus. I wonder what he would have brought up as he described those passages, don't you? Do you think he talked about Moses? Moses delivering the people of Israel from bondage, carrying out that exodus from Egypt so they're no longer slaves in Egypt? And then Jesus, in a spiritual way, giving people freedom from sin. They don't have to be slaves to sin anymore. In fact, we found out a few weeks ago on the Mount of Transfiguration that that word, that exodus, was actually how his mission was described. Maybe they would have discussed the suffering servant passages that we see, especially in Isaiah. When Isaiah describes the one that was led like a lamb before the slaughter was led, and this individual who is suffering and hurting without a word, I wonder if Jesus would have referred to that. I wonder if he would have described the righteous branch that was part of Jeremiah's prophecy in Jeremiah 23, verses 5 and 6, where he talks about this righteous branch that's going to grow up. I wonder if Jesus would have reminded them of that prophecy and said, "That was talking about me." Or maybe he could have reminded them of Daniel when Daniel was interpreting a dream that the king had, and that king had dreamed of all these different kingdoms. And Daniel was saying, there's going to be one kingdom that will fill the earth. It will be an enduring kingdom. And I wonder if Jesus would have said, "That's the kingdom I'm here to usher in. That's what I've been preaching about." Or maybe it could have been that triumphal entry that Zechariah, the Old Testament prophet, describes. Zechariah 9 and verse 9 that really fits to the T what happened as Jesus entered into Jerusalem. Maybe he could have mentioned what took place in Micah when Micah 5 and verse 2 describes this ruler of Israel that's going to come. In fact, there are over 300 references in the Old Testament, not only prophecies by prophets, but even references in the Psalms that would have foreshadowed the Messiah that was coming. And so to help them understand the cross, Jesus goes and he unpacks all of this Old Testament imagery and he's explaining to them how it was all leading up to this event. They needed to understand the purpose of the cross, and they needed to be able to recognize the one who was on the cross. Let's continue reading and see what takes place, beginning in verse 28. So they drew near to the village which they were going. He acted as if he were going farther, but they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is now far spent." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took the bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. And they said to each other, "Did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road, while he opened to us the Scriptures?" And they rose that same hour and returned to Jerusalem. Jesus talked to them about the purpose of the cross, about why the Messiah needed to suffer, and then they were able to recognize the one who had been on the cross. And it's interesting that when they come to their destination and Jesus acts like he's going to keep going, they urge him to stay with them. I wonder if they wanted to hear more of what this stranger had to say that they'd met on the road. After all, it was getting late, so they invite him in and he sits or maybe reclines at the table, if we're thinking about the ancient world, sitting at a table. And he takes the bread and he breaks it and he blesses it. And if we look at that action of taking the bread and blessing it and breaking it, as we're reading through Luke, we're reminded of when Jesus has done that. In fact, we might even think about the time he fed the 5,000, when he took the loaves and the fish and he gave thanks, he blessed them and broke them. Or maybe that Last Supper that he had with his apostles. Now, these two individuals wouldn't have been there, but we've read about it in the Gospel of Luke, where Jesus takes the bread and he blesses it and breaks it. And here, as Jesus does this, that's when their eyes are open. Now, Jesus vanishes, but they realize who they'd been walking with. They understand the message that he'd been trying to get across. And for whatever reason, it's not at this point that their eyes are really opened. I love the fact that this passage is included in Scripture, because I think it gives us a glimpse into what everyday, ordinary disciples in that time would have been experiencing. The thoughts that would have been going through their mind. That even as they heard reports of this resurrection, they didn't really know what to think. And some people had gone to the tomb and it was empty, but they hadn't found Jesus, and they were struggling to figure out how it all fit together. And then Jesus comes and he gives them hope. And they leave at that very hour. Remember, it was getting late, but they turn around and go back to Jerusalem, and they're going to find the other disciples, and they're going to share this incredibly exciting news. That phrasing of their hearts burning within them indicates how intense their joy and happiness and hope was. When they understood the purpose of the cross, and when they recognized the one who was on the cross, they had hope. So if I'm looking for hope today, I'm going to need to do the same thing. I'm going to need to understand the purpose of the cross. Now, I know that seems simple. That seems basic. It seems like that's probably something we've heard most of our lives if we've grown up in the church, that Jesus died to save us. But I wonder if we really stop and truly reflect on what that means. I wonder if we stop and reflect on what that says about us. What that says about our sin. Our inability, as frail, fragile, imperfect human beings, to achieve righteousness on our own. What that says about sins that we've committed, our desperate need for forgiveness. You know, we're entering a time of year with the Christmas holiday coming up where people are going to be thinking about Jesus. People, maybe individuals who don't think about Jesus throughout the year, are going to be thinking about Jesus, specifically the birth of Jesus. And we understand that we don't know the day that Jesus was born, and we understand that it's very unlikely it was even this time of year. But if individuals are thinking about Jesus, That gives us a teachable moment. That gives us an opportunity to seize. And one thing to keep in mind is we're going to hear messages when we turn on the TV or we listen to the radio or just in conversation where people are talking about the birth and the manger. Obviously, we can't have the cross without the manger. But I'd like to remind us of the purpose of Jesus coming. We can't just leave Jesus in the manger. We have to realize why He came. We often think about how it would have been an area that wasn't very clean. When you think about Him being born in a manger with animals all around, it probably wouldn't have smelled very good. But just imagine what it would have been like for the Son of God to come to earth in an imperfect world that was filled with the filth of sin, of our own sinfulness, in order to save us. And we think about that humble birth and we are reminded of the humble status of Joseph and Mary, that they weren't wealthy by earthly standards, but do we remember our own spiritual poverty? Because that's why Jesus came. That's why Jesus came. We don't leave Him in the manger. We remember the cross and we remember the resurrection. And in doing that, we're reminded of why we need the cross. It's just so easy to fall into the trap of thinking, well, I really do a lot for the Lord. I really am pretty accomplished in my life. I've got a pretty long resume of Christian service. But the cross reminds us that none of that can add up to the righteousness that we need and that God offers in the sacrifice of Christ. We also need to realize what all of Scripture teaches. As I mentioned, the Old Testament is filled with references to a coming Messiah. And there are times in both the Psalms and in the prophets where the suffering of Jesus is predicted. But those who were living at that time had a hard time understanding it. I mentioned the suffering servant imagery in Isaiah. At that time, they had a hard time connecting the suffering servant with this Messiah, that was the same person. And it's just as easy for us to focus on certain parts of the text, certain parts of the Bible, and not think about the whole of the message. Not to think about passages of Scripture that maybe aren't as easy to read or maybe we haven't spent as much time in. And so we need to know what Scripture teaches us about the cross. We also need to know the one who was on the cross. And here's what I mean by that. If you were to ask the average person just walking down the street who Jesus was, what do you think the response would be? I don't know about you, but I've looked around and I see that there are a lot of different versions of Jesus out there. A lot of different ideas that individuals have about who Jesus is. One of those is kind of a trendy image to think of when you think about Jesus. It's a Jesus that is spiritual, but not necessarily connected with the church. Not too many months ago, a magazine cover for Newsweek reminded us of this kind of image with the title, Forget the Church and Follow Jesus. This version of Jesus would say that it's okay for you to be spiritual by yourself, but you don't really need to be connected with the church. I mean, that's not really important. You don't really need to have relationships with God's people. That's not really important. What's important is how you feel subjectively and spiritually. Does this feel right? Does this feel true to you? And yet, when we read through the New Testament, and we hear Jesus speaking to Peter in Matthew 16. And He says, upon this rock, this confession that Jesus is the Messiah, I will build My church. Or the imagery of the church being the bride of Christ. It's not consistent with this version of Jesus, is it? The church is important. It's vitally important. Not because we're so great, but because it's part of God's plan. Or maybe there's the version of Jesus that's interested in prosperity. Specifically our prosperity. This is a message that we hear often, and you've probably heard it too, that the goal that Jesus has for you in your life is not just for food, clothing, and shelter, but for you to have everything that you want, the exact car that you want to drive, the neighborhood you want to live in, that's of the utmost importance. And when you believe in Jesus, that's what will come to you, all of these material things. We know that every good and perfect gift is from God. And we realize we can't outgive God. We know that God blesses us when we give to Him. I understand all of those things, but I also know that God's ultimate goal for us is not earthly wealth or prosperity. After all, when we read through the Sermon on the Mount and when we read Jesus warning people against building up treasures on earth that could be eaten by moths or stolen by thieves, He points towards treasure in heaven. And when you look at Christians in the first century who were selling what they had and giving it to others, they understood there was something else at stake. And so it's not just about what's here on the earth. God does bless us. He's blessed us tremendously. But our ultimate blessing is going to be spiritual. Or maybe it's a version of Jesus that doesn't require much commitment. You've probably heard promises of different products that come on the market that say, you know, you can lose weight without diet or exercise. In other words, you can change who you are without ever changing what you do. And that's kind of the intrigue to some of these products. And I'm not an expert in those products or weight loss or anything else, but I understand why that's intriguing. Because we want to have things change without actually changing ourselves. It's just human nature. And so maybe there's a version that you've run into of Jesus that just, instead of saying, come as you are, says, well, you can stay as you are. Kind of takes it a step further. I mentioned a few months ago, I had a conversation with a man I ran into at a gas station. He used some pretty choice language as we were both standing in line to pay. And then he asked what I did for a living. I told him I was a minister. And he said, oh, no kidding, that's great. He said, I may give you a call. I need a little Jesus every now and then. And I thought, wow, it's the first time I've ever heard that used that way before. Okay, but it's that kind of attitude that every now and then, it doesn't require me to change my life, but it does, you know, maybe I can have just enough Jesus to make me feel good or to feel better. And yet, when we think about the commitment that Christ required of His disciples, He never glossed over what it would really cost them to follow Him. And the same is true in Scripture. He doesn't gloss over the demands of being a Christian. Or it could be the image of Jesus as a teacher, a lecturer, someone who had a great moral philosophy. This is a pretty popular idea, that He was someone who taught, and there were some great things in the Sermon on the Mount. Maybe not the part about having pure thoughts or not being angry, and maybe not the part about judgment at the end, but there was some great stuff in there. And He had great teaching. Maybe not the miracles, but there were great things that He said, and that He lived just as a good teacher. And yet, when we think about the claims Jesus made for Himself, when He claimed that He and the Father were one, when He predicted that He was going to suffer and die and be raised from the dead, we know that Jesus didn't claim just to be a good teacher. And in fact, if we say that He's good and what He taught was accurate, then we have to believe that He was the Messiah. A good teacher wouldn't lie to His students. The reason I bring these up is not to be overly critical, but just for us to think about the different versions of Jesus that are out there. Because if I'm searching for hope, I can't find it in a version of Jesus that isn't found in Scripture. The only source of hope is in the Jesus that was described in Scripture, the true Jesus that was sent by God the Father to sacrifice Himself for us in order that we might have eternal hope. I can't find it anywhere else. But once I've read and understood who Jesus is and the offer of salvation that is available to me, then I can have hope. You know, towards the beginning of the Gospel of Luke, there's a scene where Jesus' parents have gone into Jerusalem with Jesus, and as they're leaving, they begin to have one of those moments of panic. And maybe some of you can relate to this, where you start looking around and they say, well, where is Jesus? And they thought He was with one group over here of family, but He wasn't with them. And maybe, parents, you can relate to that, you know, looking at the spouse, I thought you had Him. No, I thought you had Him. And so they go back to Jerusalem and they search, and at the end of 3 days, they find Him in the temple. And how does He respond? He says, didn't you know I had to be about my Father's business? On the road to Emmaus from Jerusalem, it's been 3 days since the crucifixion. And Jesus comes to two different individuals. And He says, didn't you know the Messiah had to be about His Father's business? Didn't you know I had to do the work of my Father? If you need hope this morning, can I remind you that we find it in the Christ who is doing the work of His Father. It looked like a hopeless time. It looked like there were no moves left. It looked like this was it. This was checkmate. The king had been trapped. In fact, when Jesus was crucified over Him, you may remember the sign read, the King of the Jews. But this was God's plan all along. And it's the only way that we can find true and lasting hope is the Jesus who is doing His Father's work. So where are you on the road to understanding? This may be the first time you've heard about the purpose of the cross and what the cross really means. If so, the good news of the gospel is you can respond to that. You can decide to follow Jesus. You can make that decision to turn your life around, to confess Jesus as Lord, to put Him on in baptism, and begin walking with that same kind of hope those two disciples had on the road back to Jerusalem that night. It may be that you just needed a reminder of where true hope comes from. And there's a way that we can encourage you and we can pray for you. If we can help you, please come as we stand and as we sing together.